ECDC On Air,
the podcast of the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control.
Keeping up to date with European epidemiology.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for tuning in to ECDC On Air, the podcast of the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control. I'm your host, Lee, recording from our headquarters in Stockholm, Sweden. Joining us today is Ottilia Mård, medical epidemiologist here at ECDC. In today's episode, we're discussing the latest reports on sexually transmitted infections in Europe. We'll explore the key findings from the recent reports, discuss the implications for public health, and uncover the strategies being implemented to address the rising rates of STIs. So we're sitting here with Ottilia Mård, medical epidemiologist here at ECDC. Welcome, Ottilia. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Hello, Lee, and thank you for inviting me.
Perfect. So before we begin, could you just tell me a little bit about your role here at ECDC and what it is that you do?
Absolutely. So I'm working at ECDC since 2011. And when I came here, I was assigned to working with STIs, HIV and hepatitis. I have been working with surveillance activities. I have been working with producing scientific advice documents like guidelines. I have been involved in epidemic intelligence and production of risk assessments and identifying threats. So it was a combination of activities, and all the time this gave me a lot of, professional rewards.
Perfect. Obviously, we're going to be talking about STIs here today. Briefly, what is ECDC's role in monitoring and responding to STIs in Europe?
ECDC has actually a pivotal role in organizing and coordinating the STI surveillance at the European Union level. And this started in 2009 when ECDC was assigned with this role. Since then, we are collecting surveillance data regarding number of cases and case characteristics for the bacterial STIs under surveillance, such as gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis, lymphogranuloma venereum, which is a form of chlamydia infection, and congenital syphilis. What we are also doing is actually to monitor trends of these STIs and also to identify cross-border threats whenever such infections can spread across several countries. And also we are identifying populations most at risk. And what we are doing is also to produce scientific advice, guidelines, documents, risk assessments that actually our colleagues in the member states can use to respond to national outbreaks or events.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about the annual epidemiological reports that we are releasing for 2022 data on syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, LGV, and congenital syphilis. So we've seen a rise in all of these cases. And what factors would you say are contributing to the increase that we're seeing in the reports?
There is a combination of factors, actually. What we are seeing is increased in number of case notifications in bacterial STIs in 2022 is actually coming as a rebound after a decrease that we have observed in 2020 and 2021, which are the years of the COVID-19 pandemic. In that period, actually, the number of notifications for bacterial STIs decreased. So what we are seeing now is an upsurge and a rebound in bacterial STIs notifications. And this is very likely because the lifting of social movement restrictions that apply during the COVID-19 pandemic, we are also seeing an impact of sexual health services being back into up to scale and functioning well to identify cases, test people at risk, and also provide treatment and then reporting. During the COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of public health and also healthcare resources were actually diverted to responding to the pandemic. So now this definitely stopped. So we have a better range of sexual health providers that can do their job. And also what we suspect is that after the lifting of the COVID-19 pandemic restrictions, people have more social interactions And we are also considering the hypothesis that there are also some changes in sexual behaviors. And if I can elaborate on this, we are seeing an increase in number of gonorrhea and chlamydia reporting among young people. Some of the hypotheses regarding this increase are that young people have some changes in sexual behaviors and practices, like an increased number of sexual partners, casual sex partners without using condoms, for example. Also, a more gender fluidity regarding the sexual orientation and also the type of sex. Also, what we are seeing, and this applies to men who have sex with men, is a tendency of increasing in number of notifications, which is not only since 2022, but we are seeing this increase since several years back. And this is coinciding very largely with the expansion of pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV, which is given to certain men who have sex with men at risk for contracting HIV infection. So they are protected against HIV and possibly they don't use condoms. So then they are more exposed to get bacterial STI. And also what is happening with the men who have sex with men that use pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV is that they are regularly screened for sexually transmitted infections. So more asymptomatic chlamydia and gonorrhea and more syphilis can be actually diagnosed because they attend this regular screening.
Okay, so you mentioned a couple of different groups there. So men who have sex with men, young people, and so on. Are these the only groups that are really being affected by this, or are there others that we're seeing these increases in as well?
Men who have sex with men are the population group that bear the highest burden of sexually transmitted infections in EU, EEA. For example, 75% of syphilis notifications in most recent year are among men who have sex with men. 60% of gonorrhea cases are diagnosed among men who have sex with men. And recently, the number of chlamydia diagnoses scaled up to 20% of cases being reported as transmission between men who have sex with men. Also, for lymphogranuloma venereum, most of the cases are among men who have sex with men. And there are some factors that influence this. As I said before, there is a better case detection and reporting among those men who have sex with men that attend for having regular screening because they are using PrEP for HIV. And also because following this existence of very effective antiviral therapies for HIV infection, there is a relaxation in sexual behaviors because HIV infection is no longer a threat because it's very well kept under control. And actually, it can become more or less untransmissible to the other partners if the treatment is provided accordingly. And also there is this chance to protect yourself through taking pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV. So actually, in the end, there is more unsafe sexual practices, a larger number of sexual partners, casual sex partners, and several other factors that actually keep the men who have sex with men, the population most at risk for being diagnosed with the bacterial STIs. But this is not the only population category. And as I said, we are seeing increases among young people. And this is also not new for chlamydia, for example. The young people between 15 to 25 years old, they were always those who were mostly diagnosed with chlamydia infections and to a lesser extent with gonorrhea. And this was primarily because the young people were targeted by testing programs in many European countries, so they were more likely to be diagnosed even if they didn't have symptoms. So they were diagnosed because of screening. But what we are seeing now is a kind of increase which is not necessarily due to these screening programs, and it appears also in countries that do not implement national screening programs. And this is very likely because of changes in sexual behaviors that expose them to a higher risk of infections with syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. And there is another category that I would really like to mention, and this is because of a higher impact on health, and these are the pregnant women. And what we are seeing now for syphilis, after several years where syphilis notifications were kept very low among heterosexual men and women, in recent year, after the COVID-19 pandemic, in 2022, we are seeing an increase in number of cases that are notified among women of reproductive age in several countries. And this is very worrying, because syphilis infection, when is not diagnosed in a pregnant woman, can impact the pregnancy itself. So the woman can actually lose the pregnancy or can have a stillborn baby. And also untreated syphilis infection in pregnancy can lead to serious complications in the newborn. So obviously, in the current circumstances, pregnant women need to attend for syphilis screening during pregnancy.
I want to talk a little bit about sort of STI education. Previously, a lot of the focus was on HIV and AIDS in the past. Do you think it's a case that people have sort of forgotten about the existence of other STIs since they've always been treated as, you can go to a doctor and get treatment and it's relatively simple, so that people have kind of forgotten the messaging around safe sex?
I would like to have more data in order to respond in a confident way to this question. More data about what is the content of sexual education in European Union countries. And what I know is that there is a diversity in the content of sexuality education in different countries. And there are models of good practices and also countries where there is not so much dialogue in the schools and also maybe in the family and in other circumstances about what is safe sex and what are the sexual transmitted infections. So I'm sure that you are right that a lot of attention was given to prevention and awareness of HIV infection, and possibly less for chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis, which are probably less likely to be diagnosed among young people. However, the key prevention messages and sexual education should definitely start early and should be comprehensive, should discuss more largely about what is safe sex, what can protect the young person or a person in general against contracting sexually transmitted infection, either bacterial, either viral, and why it is important to recognize symptoms, why it is important to seek for health care, to get the appropriate treatment, and why it's important also to inform your partners so the infection should not spread beyond you. Probably sexual health education and in general education should address the issue of stigma, because there should be no shame in having an STI. It can happen. But it's important to manage it and to take appropriate actions to protect yourself and protect your partners.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned stigma, and I was really wondering what the role of it does play in not only STI education, but STI prevention, in that if people are worried that they go to the doctor and they don't want to discuss their sexual activities with the doctor, and if for young people, if they can't discuss it in school, how can we address that?
This is definitely true. And we are also seeing here a kind of variation in the degree of stigma, in the degree of how confident and how freely people can talk about sex, can talk about STIs in different parts of Europe. And ideally, this should be harmonized to a more free dialogue that involves, like, there should be obviously no shame in getting an STI or having a certain sexual orientation, for example. Stigma is a barrier to testing, is a barrier to getting treated for an STI, and is a barrier also to empower people to talk freely about their sexual health. Definitely, we have to encourage different layers of society, including the healthcare provider, to think more openly and engage in a more open dialogue with their patients about sexual transmitted infections.
One of the things that I found interesting in the AERs was that you saw, even before the COVID pandemic, that the numbers were going up, and then obviously they dropped through the pandemic. With the numbers going back up now, what does that have for the implications of the future of public health planning?
Indeed, before the COVID-19 pandemic, we have seen an increase in the number of bacterial STIs notifications in 2019 to a certain level that it was the highest since ECDC started to record the number of bacterial STIs. So we thought that was a kind of historical high. And then the COVID-19 pandemic context came and the number of reports decreased, and we discussed why. And now for 2022 data, we are seeing again a rebound in case notifications, and the number of cases and the notification rates actually go beyond the pre-pandemic level. And this is happening in many of the European Union countries and also for many of the STIs. For a certain population group, such as men who have sex with men, this tendency of increasing number of notifications is not new. We were hoping that it can stop and it can curve and maybe decrease, but it didn't happen. And there are some explanations for this. As I said before, it is very likely due to expansion of PrEP for HIV programs that come together with regular and more frequent testing for bacterial STIs. So increase case detection and case notifications. Also, there is a change in testing policies for men who have sex with men who are more largely screened for infections in some settings. And there is an increase in unsafe sexual behaviors or sexual practices that come with a higher risk of getting a sexual transmitted infection. What is actually new is this increase in bacterial STI notifications among people who define themselves as heterosexual. And this is valid for syphilis, and this is new, and also for the young people, for gonorrhea and chlamydia. Behind this, we presume that there are changes in sexual behaviors to a higher risk, and also more opportunities in some countries to have access to testing, for example, for STIs. So in this circumstance, there is a definite need for public health authorities, for national authorities, to step up prevention and response activities. What works usually is to conduct sexual health awareness campaigns to inform the population and certain risk groups about these increases, so they are aware and they maybe can change to safer sexual behaviors. Beside the sexual health education and the promotion of condoms, condoms are effective and they work when they are used effectively and consistently, and they can prevent gonorrhea, chlamydia, and in most instances, syphilis. So it would be a missed opportunity not to use condoms when having sex with a new partner or with a casual partner. What also works is enhance testing opportunities for people most at risk, like those I mentioned before, and link them to care whenever they test positive. What is also important is that a treatment for bacterial STI should be available in whatever settings people with an STI will attend for care. What is also important is that there are treatment guidelines for gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis that are regularly updated based on scientific evidence on antimicrobial resistant patterns. And in order to help this, ECDC is actually coordinating a surveillance network for the antimicrobial resistance in Neisseria gonorrhea. And we are doing this since 2009. And we are regularly producing reports that indicate which antibiotic should actually be provided as a first-line therapy option or second-line and so on. So the clinicians are making use of this data. What is absolutely important when we are seeing increases and outbreaks in different populations is to connect with the civil society organizations and partner with the patient organizations and keep a close dialogue between public health clinicians and actually those who are affected and those who are at risk for sexually transmitted infections.
What I find is quite interesting is that even though we know things like condoms work, that people should engage in safe sex practices, we're still seeing the increases due to potentially more risky behavior. Do you think there's an element of that safe sex messages around condoms is just not working anymore?
I think there is a combination of factors leading to this. Possibly that messages are not strong enough in relation to the benefit of using condoms to prevent chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. and many other sexually transmitted infections, which are not bacterial and they can transmit through sex, which are, for example, human papilloma virus, herpes virus, and hepatitis B, for example, or HIV, for example. So condoms are effective. Possibly there are some instances where people either do not want to use a condom, or maybe they cannot use a condom, or they cannot negotiate the use of condoms. And there are certain instances when possibly people are forced to have sex without having a condom, although this is not necessarily their will. What is important is to be aware that there is an increase in sexually transmitted infection, in bacterial STIs, and condoms can help. It is true that we have treatment, and the treatment regimens are effective for chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. However, it is so much easier to use a condom than actually going through testing, going through the painful regimen of intramuscular injections, or staying even in hospital for a more elaborated treatment when we are talking about multi-drug or extensively drug-resistant gonorrhea infection. But you know, 100 years ago, before the penicillin came in, it was really, really painful. And gonorrhea, for example, was not treatable. And it led to serious complications. Women had these pelvic inflammatory infections, and they became infertile, and they could lose their genital organs and reproductive organs. And you can also develop arthritis. It was called like a crippling disease, gonorrhea. And for syphilis, it was a really, really ugly infection. Let's say maybe before 1940s, it was very difficult to treat. So what we have now is a privilege. We are privileged because we have treatment, effective therapies for bacterial STIs, and also we have prevention. We can use condoms, actually, and they work. And we have testing. Testing is affordable for most, but it is offered, and then you can be linked to care. So it is very changed from what it was.
Thank you very much for your time. We will put as much information into the notes of this episode, but thank you again, Attilia, and hopefully we'll not have to speak to you again so soon, because we'll see the numbers in STI cases drop.
Thank you, Lee. It was a pleasure for me to contribute to this podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode on the rise of sexually transmitted infections in Europe. If you would like to know more information about STIs in Europe, you can find a link in the notes of this episode. For more information about ECDC in general, please visit ecdc.europa.eu or find us on social media for the latest news.